No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show that is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and changing America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light because it's time to make America think again. I'm here with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, and we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to tell you what's out there and bring the guests to you that can explain what's going on in the world and hope that an informed voter is a good voter. That's what we think anyway. Tonight we have Dr. Alan Lichtman with us. Professor Lichtman's been on the show before. He's written 13 books. I would go over his credentials with you, but that would take up the whole show. He's an amazing guest, professor at American University, one of the several great universities here in the District of Columbia, and he's here to talk about his new book. So let me introduce him. Liberty, thanks for being with us. I know you're out there. And Dr. Lichtman, welcome to the show. And please tell us what your new book is and tell us what it's about.
Yes, my new book, thank you so much, Senator, is called Conservative at the Core, A New History of American Conservatism. It is being published, get this, by a Catholic institution, University of Notre Dame Press. Wow. It is coming out September 1, so soon. You can pre-order on Amazon or on the University of Notre Dame Press website. It is an update of my 2008 book, White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, that was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award in general nonfiction, all nonfiction books published that year. And the basic theme behind this book is that you cannot take what American conservatism tells you at face value. You have to reconstruct it. And that all of the so-called principles that American conservatism professes are, in fact, nothing more than ideas for public consumption to try to persuade the American people that have little or nothing to do with what American conservatism is really all about. And to prove this, I've looked at 100 years of American conservatism from the end of World War I to the second administration of Donald Trump. Let me give you some examples. You heard Speaker Mike Johnson claiming, you know, that he has a mission from God. He says, you want to understand my politics, just look at the Bible, just pick up a Bible. This is their attempt to appropriate traditional conservative values. Well, pick up a Bible. Look at the teachings of Jesus. Is he railing against homosexuality? Not even a concept of that time. Is he decrying abortion or saying, you know, that marriage must be between a man and a woman? All the things that so preoccupy Mike Johnson and other conservatives are either nowhere or at the fringes of the teachings of Jesus or even the Old Testament. What, if you read the Bible, what the overwhelming emphasis of the teachings of Jesus are all about are concern for telling the truth. That's a major theme. And warning about the dangers of wealth and greed. That is another major theme, vastly outweighing the things that Mike Johnson and other conservatives claim to derive from the teaching of Jesus. And of course, another element that they totally ignore is concern and caring for the poor, the oppressed, and the marginalized, and the sojourners among us. Then take their major secular preoccupation, which is limited government. We hear that all the time. In fact, that is simply, as we see in this, I don't know why the media keeps calling it the big, beautiful bill. I prefer what Elon Musk says. The only thing I agree with from Elon Musk, disgusting abomination. It is anything but limited government. And Republicans have never actually supported real liberal government, except as we see in this bill, as an excuse for cutting back programs that actually help people like food stamps and Medicaid. You know, look at the World War I era that I go back to. What was the main preoccupation of conservatives? Prohibition. At that point in history, the biggest big government intrusion into the lives of Americans. And then fast forward today, what are conservatives doing? Banning abortions, an enormous big government intrusion into people's lives. Deporting, not criminals, but anyone who is undocumented, including people who've been here for years and decades, pay taxes, contributing to our economy. And this is another enormous big government intrusion. That disgusting abomination bill has, I think it's still there, who knows, but initially at least, $155 billion to promote the expansion. Fiscal responsibility, this bill blows a huge hole in the deficit, as did Donald Trump in his first term with his taxes after promising, we're going to reduce the deficit big time. He blew a big hole in the deficit. States' rights, we see Donald Trump clamping down on the state of California in their attempt to control pollution and climate change within their own boundaries. We've seen conservatives supporting a national right to life amendment that would override the laws regarding abortion in every state in the country. We've also seen Donald Trump, by executive order, trying to impose on the states his own conservative orthodoxy in education and crippling restrictions on the right to vote. Personal morality and responsibility. Just look at the personal morality and responsibility. Going back to the 1920s, President Harding, a notorious womanizer, Newt Gingrich, Dennis Hastert, a convicted pedophile, Donald Trump himself found guilty by a civil jury of sexual abuse and harm. Bragging about doing anything he wants to women because he's a star. Herschel Walker, leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, which is mired in a horrible sex scandal. Law and order, the worst scandals in our history violating law and order have all been under Republican presidents. Teapot Dome under Harding, Watergate under Nixon, Iran-Contra under Reagan. And I can't even count the scandals under Donald Trump, supposed law and order president who was convicted of 34 felony counts unto himself and who has pardoned those in the January 6th insurrection, including those who violently attacked and injured police officers. So what given that none of these things that are professed are really part of conservatism, what in my book, Conservative at the Core, have I uncovered they are really all about? Two things go right from prohibition to anti-abortion to anti-gay discrimination. And that is, number one, their own distorted version of traditional Christian and Judaic values, which ignore the great bulk of teaching in order to claim that these teachings support their politics. In fact, their politics determine their reading of Christianity and Judaism, not the other way around. And then the other thing is support for private enterprise, not free enterprise like they profess. From the big tariffs of the Harding era to the Trump tariffs, they have imposed what is the greatest a violation of free markets, big tariff regulations and laws. And of course, they have supported subsidies, loan guarantees, special tax breaks, friendly regulations for business. That's why I say they are supporting private enterprise, business, not the ideal of free markets and free enterprise. And it's critically important that the American people understand this, because it explains everything that Donald Trump is doing. Donald Trump is not, as some have claimed, you know, a maverick who's hijacked conservatism. He is the logical culmination of 100 years of American conservatism, now manifest in his unchecked second administration, where he feels free to impose conservative orthodoxy on all of the American people, regardless of what the Constitution and the laws might actually tell us. And if you look at what's being done, there's not a single thing that Donald Trump is doing that actually helps the American people. He claims to be a populist, you know, for the ordinary American. Well, consistent with the whole history of American conservatism, he's the opposite of a populist. Look at this bill that's now he's trying to force through Congress. Who does it help?
Can we stop us?
Just big corporations second. And the wealthy.
Yeah, just one second here, Doctor, because we've got a lot of stuff to unpack here. You said a lot. And before we move on to the big bill, big, beautiful bill.
Yes.
First of all, the things that you're saying about how it relates to Christianity, well, I got to tell you, right from the very start, I said, as a Christian, how does a man who stands up there and says, I am your retribution, get people to think that he's doing this in the name of a man who said, I am your salvation? You know, I mean, it seems to me that everything you're saying about how he has no connection to Christian values at all should be obvious to everybody, but it's not for some reason.
Should be.
So let me ask you. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, not just from his policies, but from his personal life. You know,
right, his from personal his personal life
is a violation of what Christianity and Judaism teaches us.
Right. Well, I said right from the beginning, my mother, who is a Republican field organizer in her spare time, would have dumped this guy the minute he said he grabs women, you know. I can't even bring myself to say it on the air.
Yes, by their private parts. Yes.
By their private part, et cetera. This is a bad introduction to Liberty Jones, but Liberty, do you have a question for the doctor?
Well, you know, thank you so much for coming on today. Really, everything you've said has been really interesting. I think, you know, you talk about the distinction of private enterprise and free enterprise as the basis of current conservative disconnect with the public's rhetoric and the political action. And I think, you know, this is something very interesting, because a lot of the Latino community I've been talking to nowadays, a lot of them were initially voting for Trump this round and did vote for Trump. And I think that's the greatest part. Everyone says that they did it for the economy. And I see a lot of these people now coming back and they're saying, you know what? This was a terrible decision. He's not doing anything for the economy. He's doing things for himself, which, you know, brings me back. He thinks he's the second coming of God because he's a narcissist. But my question to you is, in a world where the media is so easily manipulated, how can we distinguish, without telling the secrets of your book, how can we properly distinguish between genuine, you know, religious conviction and genuine political messaging, instead of messages that are designed to just mobilize specific constituencies? You know, how you're writing a book on it, so I think you're good at deciphering what's true and what isn't. How can we reconstruct this gap?
That's a very profound question, because while there always has been disinformation, dissembling, and misinformation in politics, it has exploded, particularly in the 2024 election cycle. You know, a lot of it can be attributed to Elon Musk, who controls X. You know, one of the biggest platforms we have. According to reports, 2 billion people viewed his misinformation. Let me give you an example. I just always want to talk abstractly. According to exit polls, the gap between those who are pro-choice and pro-life was 36 points, 36 percentage points pro-choice ahead. But when you look at the abortion issue, which should have been a winning issue for Harris, clearly it was 3-point difference, 49 versus 46, largely because of all the misinformation that was being put out. Elon Musk himself spent tens of millions of dollars just on the abortion issue. If it hadn't been not a 36-point gap, but just a 10-point gap, Harris would have won the election going away. So how do we combat this? In part, we've got to develop our own progressive sources utilizing the new media. You know, I have said many times for years that you can summarize American politics in one sentence. Republicans have no principles. Democrats have no spine. And we now see it in the spreading, the fearful reaction of Democrats to the victory of Mamdani in New York. Instead of playing to lose, the Democrats, as the major alternative to the Republicans right now, have got to start playing to win. Instead of worrying about what this guy did, they should learn from him. Not necessarily particular policies. That's not the point. But how was he able to do what other Democrats have not been able to do? Mobilize thousands upon thousands of volunteers and appeal to young men who had been drifting away from the Democratic Party. The Democrats and those who believe in our country and our freedoms need to become bold and play to win, not play not to lose, and develop what we haven't seen as an alternative to Trump, a simple, compelling alternative message. I have a live show every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, at Alan Lichtman YouTube. You can easily access it. We have a contest going. We have 171,000 subscribers. We have asked all our subscribers to come up with an alternative to the Trump message, a simple, compelling, appealing message. Progressives once had it, right? The New Frontier, the Fair Deal, the New Deal, bridge to the 21st century. But they've lost it. And it's really important we find it again.
Well, and, you know, it's a very profound thing you say here, Doctor, about playing to win instead of playing not to lose, because that's kind of the, in my opinion, playing not to lose is kind of the natural momentum of politics. you know, we're always guarding against, instead of standing up there, it seems to me that courage is something that's severely lacking these days in the Democratic Party. But let me ask you something about the your whole concept about conservatism and how this kind of masked a more sinister agenda. I was a salesman doctor. I worked my way through graduate school and undergraduate school selling very expensive men's clothes. And what they taught us was that we weren't there to try to convince you to buy something. We were just there to make you feel comfortable with your purchase. Yes, you want to do this. Yes, it'll make you look good. Yes, it's worth the money. Yes, you know, we're not trying to convince you. We're just more or less trying to make you feel comfortable with what you really want to do. And is that what this conservative mask does? Does it make people feel comfortable with what their underlying feeling, which may be much more sinister, maybe based on misogyny or racism or a number of other things? Is that really what the overall conservatism that kind of is what we would consider classic conservatism? Is that what the purpose of it is? Is to, you know, cover up that make you feel comfortable with what you really want to do, which is not like women, not like people of different colors, you know, act out of fear instead of any other emotion.
I have a whole chapter of conservative at the core where I talk about the long history of xenophobia, racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism in the conservative movement. But you're absolutely right. You know, you can't, in this day and age, overtly campaign on that. So you've got to put out these alternative so-called principles, which are simply dispensable, discardable, to pursue the real objectives. But what these other underlying very negative elements do is they provide emotional impact, that, you know, support for business and enterprise doesn't give you, but this really gives you a strong emotional jolt. You know, an American patriot in support of our country, but I also recognize, this is really important, that there always have been two sides to the American heritage, and they've always been in conflict, and under Trump, we see one of those two sides coming to the fore. One side is open, honest, tolerant, celebratory of our differences and our diversity. The other side is misogynist, racist, xenophobic, concerned only with maintaining the power and wealth of the privileged. Let's not forget, we had 300 years of slavery in this country. We were a laggard in abolishing slavery. France, Spain, England were all ahead of us. And it took a war in this country. We had Jim Crow discrimination, which didn't even begin to get broken down until the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and is still very strong. So there are always these two conflicting, competing elements of American life. And it's so important that we understand what this other side really represents and not get caught up in what, as you say, they would like us to believe, oh, we're for free markets and, you know, we want to keep government off your backs and, you know, balance the budget, you know, none of which has any truth to it.
Well, quickly, let me ask you, before I let Liberty ask another brilliant question, let me ask you, might this conservatism that's kind of this overlay, might that also be misleading them as misleading, you know, actually misleading Donald Trump and his people? Because I just saw, Doctor, before we came on the air, I just saw on CNN the big, beautiful bill on in recent polling, the last couple of days. It's 29 points under. It's 29% of us dislike it more than like it. And even Fox News has it at 23% below the people that are in favor of it. So maybe they're miscalculating as well, because maybe people want to close the border, but they don't want to send these people to a prison in the middle of the Everglades surrounded by alligators and anacondas. Yeah, are they miscalculating as well? They're overshooting because
I think they are definitely miscalculating. What they have done is narrow their appeal to the base. You know, Donald Trump has said, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and my base wouldn't crack. And there's some truth to that. It seems no matter what they do, you know, their base doesn't crack. And if you look at the internals of those polls, you'll see this disgusting abomination of a bill is supported by something like 80 to 90% of Republicans and even more of Trump voters, but overwhelmingly opposed, not just by Democrats, but by independents as well. But the point is, they believe they have the power right now. And they believe there's no check on them. There's no election, you know, for a year and a half, no presidential election for 3.5 years. So they are going to use the power to the hilt. I remember back in the Nixon era, where the Nixon tape showed right at the beginning of his second term, when he got reelected to a second term, just like Trump did, although not consecutive, he told his people, we are now going to use the power to reward our friends, punish our enemies, and assure our power. Of course, he couldn't do that because he got caught up in the Watergate scandal. But that's something that conservatives have wanted to do for a very long time. And we're now seeing it with Donald Trump. We see it with the disdain for the courts. You know, they don't care what the courts say. They're going to pursue their agenda regardless, and they're hoping to get bailed out, as they did on birthright citizenship temporarily by the Supreme Court. But even if they don't, they realize that they don't face any real consequences for what they're doing.
Well, Liberty, do you have, especially on birthright citizenship, do you have a question?
Well, you know, thinking a little more optimistically, I feel
that'd
like
be good. I love that.
I feel like maybe a positive effect of all of this pain and fear that we're dealing with is that, well, do you think that this political climate maybe makes it easier for the public to see through the dissonance between principles and practice? Do you think that things are becoming so silly and comical that I think people are really trying to rebrand the way they consume this information, or no?
The glimmers of hope there. Donald Trump's approval ratings are the lowest at this point in the presidency of any prior president, except for Donald Trump in his first term. Unfortunately, I wish people had come to see this in 2024, because it was all out there. You know, it was all out there in Project 2025. Everything he's doing now, you know, was right out in the open. This is the thing about Trump. He's not subtle. What he does is right out in the open, and somehow people who are now regretting it didn't see it. So there is a glimmer of hope in the polls, and, you know, as the senator pointed out, this signature bill of his is overwhelmingly rejected by the American people. And there's also some hope in the off-year elections. Democrats have done incredibly well, even though I'm very critical of the Democrats, because they're not Republicans, they're not Trumpers. They've done very, very well in the midterm elections, way outperforming Harris's margins in congressional and state legislative districts where special elections are being held. So I do think there is a glimmer of hope, but as we pointed out, it needs to be built upon. You know, those who oppose Trump, particularly the Democratic opposition, need to be far bolder. Playing not to lose is a sure way to lose. And they need to develop a simple and compelling message. I've been studying our politics as an historian. As Senator said, this is now my 14th book. And I have never seen a situation where a major party has been so deficient in messaging and so spineless, so worried about criticism. Go back to original sin. Merrick Garland, who's a friend of mine. I've known him for over 60 years. A brilliant judge, maybe the best judge we had, or certainly one of them. Then you put him in the Justice Department, and he freezes. Oh, my God, you know, I can't go after Donald Trump and, you know, those who are really controlling things, because I might get criticized by the Republicans for being too, going after them by being too political. So he delays for almost 2 years to appoint a special prosecutor, which enables Trump, who's the master of delay, to delay all of this till after the election. If he had acted boldly as he should, we wouldn't have Donald Trump in the White House today, because the January 6th trial would have gone forward, and I'm convinced, I have seen the evidence, he would have been convicted. So, you know, I'm worried if I act boldly, I might be criticized by the Republicans. Did he learn anything from what happened to him when he was appointed by Obama to the Supreme Court? He didn't do anything to antagonize Republicans, but they wouldn't even give him a hearing in the Congress. Republicans will attack you anyway. It doesn't matter what you do. You cannot act out of fear.
And you know what? As a fellow political scientist, doctor, I keep coming back to, you know, what I studied in graduate school, which was the works of Karl Marx. And I think that Marx would have said that this is inevitable in a democratic capitalist system, right? That you can't promote the general interest if everybody's worried about their own little parochial interests. Is it inevitable, do you think? By coming up with a constitution and a Bill of Rights, have we avoided this, or is this inevitable?
Yeah, you know, there are various schools of history. You know, Marx is a very overarching, deterministic kind of system, very powerful. I'm not a Marxist, by the way, but I do not believe in determinism. I still believe we can control our own destiny, that things are not inevitable. You know, we have gotten through incredible crises before. You know, we got through secession and the Civil War. And by the way, you know, it just appalls me that Trump wants to celebrate traitors who fought against the United States in support of the most inhumane system we've ever had, slavery. They weren't fighting for states' rights. If you read the Confederate Constitution, it's the most anti-states' rights constitution you can imagine when it comes to slavery. They give no latitude to the states to do anything about the slave system. You know, so we got through that crisis. We got through the Great Depression. We got through World War II. We got through the Cold War. Does this inevitably mean we will get through this current crisis, which is just as severe in my view, even though it's not involving war, but threatens our democracy as much as anything we've seen. No, it does not mean that we will inevitably get through or not, but it does mean we have to act. And I was very encouraged by the No Kings demonstrations. You know, voting with your feet and getting out there and demonstrating is not irrelevant, if not for the demonstrations of the incredibly courageous civil rights advocates in the 1960s. We would not have gotten the Civil Rights Act of 64 or the Voting Rights Act of 65. So yes, getting out there voting with your feet is important. But, you know, as I said, overarching, those who want to preserve our freedom and our Constitution need to develop better messaging and take much better advantage of the new media, something, you know, Mondami did, and Democrats should learn from him and not just cower in fear. The absolutely wrong, wrong reaction to what happened in New York.
And, you know, I know that you, Liberty, you're a little too young to remember this, but I remember the days, those brave civil rights workers. But what a horrible cost we paid. Wasn't it Dr. Medgar Evers, Dr. King, Robert Kennedy, JFK, all the people that we lost who stood up to pass the legislation that you just outlined? Liberty? What do you got to say?
You know, I think that that's a really important point. You know, if we don't mobilize ourselves, how are we able to achieve anything? Especially, you know, even you guys bring up Marx, but Tocqueville, who is one of our very founding philosophers, said that democracy was amazing, but that inevitably this would happen, right? So it was confirmed that this inevitably would happen. And I think that that's what's so interesting about how emotional this election was and how emotional the media continues to increasingly become, that is something psychological. We've now separated the outline of functional politics and our psychological, you know, reaction to the world. And so if mobilization and if demonstrations, and as you mentioned, voting with your feet is something that will create change, it makes the fear that he's enforcing the most alarming subject. You know, I don't want to claim this as a dictatorship. I know that this is not like it, but you know, all the greatest dictators needed fear in order to prevent people from moving forward. And do you think that's something that we see being abused with conservative traditional values as well?
Let me give you a broad historical view. You know, democracy was almost non-existent throughout thousands of years of human civilization. It's a relatively precious and recent phenomenon. But like all precious things, it can be destroyed. The first golden age of democracy was right after World War I, when out of very few, we got about two dozen democracies. By the 1940s, those numbers had been slashed in more than half. Very few democracies left. The next golden age of democracy was in the late 20th century. But the 21st century has witnessed a catastrophic decline in democracy across the world. There are very few nations now that are fully functioning democracies. The vast majority of the world's people live in autocratic or semi-autocratic systems or badly flawed democratic systems. And democracy has been in decline, not because of external conquest, but because of rot from within. And there's a phenomenal book called Spin Doctors, which says the way modern autocrats take power is twofold. And this was actually foreshadowed also in Orwell's 1984. As you point out, fear and intimidation is critically important. But the other side of the autocratic coin is controlling what we think and what we believe. Why do you think not only Trump, but governors like DeSantis and Abbott are going after our education system and trying to impose a conservative orthodoxy on education? It's all part of controlling what we think, we know, and what we believe, and pushing us towards 1984 double think, you know, where famine is plenty and war is peace and hate is love.
Well, I won't hold you to this, doctor, but you think that we're making room for a third party here? If the Democrats don't have the courage to stand up, and the Republicans don't seem to have the courage to stand up either, is there room all of a sudden for a third party? It never seems to work. You know, we can.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Whoever you want to talk to. No.
No third party in the history of the country has ever gained traction. You know, some point to the example of the Republican Party, but that's not a proper example because the Whig Party had already disintegrated. There was only one major party, the Democrats, at that point, and Republicans filled the hole. As you can see, the Reform Party of Perot, the Libertarian Party, the Socialist Party, the Green Party has never gained traction. It's just too much in our modern politics stacked against it. It takes huge amounts of money to compete in modern politics. You know, the last cycle, many billions of dollars were spent. Even to get a congressional seat takes millions of dollars. Even a local legislative position takes hundreds of thousands of dollars. Plus, you know, you got to get on the ballot, and the major parties have automatic access to the ballot. They have name recognition. They have support from the media. So right now, I'm not advocating a third party. I think that would only divide progressives and give Republicans even more power. We saw that the other way around when Republicans divided in 1912, when Teddy Roosevelt thought to form a third progressive party, and all it did was divide his own Republican Party. So right now, I think our best hope, because we realistically have a two-party system, we always have, is to try to work on revitalization of the Democratic Party. You know, if that doesn't work in the next few years, let's talk again.
Okay. Well, I would also say, and maybe Liberty can weigh in on this, but in the recent primary, Democratic primary in New York, which surprised everybody, the winner got his one of his strongest groups were voters between the ages of 18 to 24. There were 50,000 who voted in the last midterm primary in New York. In this primary, more well over 100,000 voted. So any ideas how we use the work that you're doing and and what's going on currently in the political environment to energize young people and get more of them out to vote? Because, you know, 4 years at the Democratic Party, when I was at the DNC, Doc, we overlooked young people. We just didn't even care about them because they didn't vote. Now, this was back in the early this was in 1980 when I worked for Jimmy Carter.
But that seems to be changing.
And is there something we can do to change it more, do you think, that we're not doing?
Well, as I said, the first thing progressives have to do is stop cowering in fear. Instead of fretting about this extraordinary victory, they need to learn from it. And I repeat that. They need to learn from it and emulate it. And how do you inspire young people? Several ways. One, you speak boldly to their needs. Young people respond to boldness. They don't respond to timidity. They don't respond to politics of, you know, let's play not to lose. you know, many, many decades ago, I partnered with Jesse Jackson, and we wrote an op-ed called Progressives Must Act with Boldness. That was, I don't know, 30 years ago or more, 40 years ago. And that message is still very important. Secondly, they've got to master the beams of communication that reach young people. And it's not the old traditional mainstream media, which, by the way, is going down the drain because it's become controlled by corporations and billionaires. So they've got to master these alternative means of communication. That's why I have a YouTube show that's also, I don't do it, but my son does, broadcast and all kinds of other alternative media. And of course, they need to speak to what young people are concerned about and what actually excites them and advances their interests. Those are the three things I would talk about.
Liberty, what do you think? What motivates you to get out there and vote?
You know, I think something really important that I saw a lot of, especially in young people's media channels, is, you know, instead of the Democratic Party just being a responder to conservative traditional values and Republican statements, they need to come up with their own story. I think that's what we're lacking. I think if they actually come up with their own story, it would be really enticing. You know, we want to hear something new. We don't want a reaction of what we don't like.
Absolutely. This is what I've been preaching for years. Democrats need to come up with a simple, compelling message that both resonates emotionally with people, especially young people, and also meets their needs. And it's not like the Democrats don't have anything going for them. Look at over the last 100 years, the federal legislation that has been most helpful to ordinary people: Social Security, the Wagner Act to bolster unions, Medicaid, Medicare, aid to education, environmental protections, the Affordable Care Act. They've all been Democratic initiatives. You would be hard-pressed to find anything that's come out of the Republicans that comes close. And, of course, there are big issues right now that Democrats need to address. For example, climate change. It is the young people of America who are going to be most affected by climate change. And, you know, it poses an existential threat. So why aren't we developing policies and messages as compelling on climate change as FDR develop policies and message to deal with the crises of his time?
Yeah, it seems to me, Dr. Lichtman, that we really, really are in need of more inspirational leaders on the Democratic side of things. And I think if I had to, you know, if they asked me what was the number one thing that cost the Democrats the election in the last election, 2024, I would say it was playing defense instead of playing offense. I think
absolutely.
We just didn't. Our candidate didn't resonate with anybody. And for us to stand there and constantly say, you know, we're not Donald Trump, we're not Donald Trump, we're not Donald Trump, just isn't enough.
That ain't it.
And it's one of the reasons we asked you to be on the show, Doctor, because this is really what I think we need to do, is to listen to people like you who are actually doing the research so that we can make informed decisions rather than being all sucked into the 30-second soundbite. So how do we move forward, Doctor? We're running out of time. We've got another 5 minutes or so. Tell us, what is your prescription for moving forward?
Yeah, it's all in my book, please. Conservative at the Core, A New History of American Conservatism, available September 1, but you can pre-order on Amazon and on the website of the University of Notre Dame Press. So here is, you know, looking forward, critical to vote with your feet, to get out there and demonstrate. Put it right in their face. Number two, master the new sources of media. You know, it's a new era. You don't speak to young people with the way you spoke to America 20, even 10 years ago. Three, develop, as you say, a positive, compelling message that resonates emotionally and meets people's needs. Third, support organizations like the ACLU that are going to court and challenging what Donald Trump is doing. The judicial system, even though they want to disregard it, still exists, and we hope it will be sustained as a critical safeguard of our democracy. And then, of course, get out to vote. Get your friends out to vote. You know, join get out to vote organizations. So there are lots of positive things we can do. And remember, the American people right now are with us, not with Donald Trump, as you say. Support for his major initiative is somewhere in the 20 to 30% range. We've never seen anything that bad in American history.
So, Doctor, tell us once again how we tune in to hear you on YouTube.
When
is your show on?
I have a contest
going.
Can we
get it? All right, go ahead.
Yes. Every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern at Alan Lichtman YouTube. That's A-L-L-A-N-L-I-C-H-T-M-A-N YouTube. At Alan Lichtman YouTube, Tuesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And please subscribe. We have 171,000 subscribers. Out of nothing, we started with zero.
Wow.
So this kind of message does resonate.
Yes, and I encourage people to listen and continue to learn from Dr. Lichtman and from all of those people out there that are trying to move us forward as a nation. Again, Dr. Lichtman, thanks so much for being with us tonight. And as always, Liberty Jones, I'll let you have the last word and then we'll sign off.
Thank you so much for coming on, and I'm definitely going to be checking out that YouTube.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Have a happy...
Check out my book, and you know where to find me in the future.
Okay, and we'll be looking for you, too. And happy 4th to people. It's going to be the 4th of July before you hear us again. And remember, we don't need to make America great again. America's always been great. We just need to find it again. So thanks, Dr. Lichtman. Thanks, Liberty Jones. Here's something that I think says it all for all of us. Here's Sly and the Family Stone with Everyday People. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.